When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month. Hey, witches. We're dropping into your feed today with a special bonus episode of Witch Please with guest Ella McLeod. Ella joined me and Marcel in June for a Patreon-only bonus episode to discuss policing of magic in the wizarding world. It's a great little chat, originally released to Witch Please patrons in our $5, $10, and $13 tiers. And we thought, you know what? As we get ready to launch into season 5, why not give our general audience a taste of what we get up to on our Patreon? We hope you enjoy the conversation, and if you want to learn more about becoming a Patreon supporter, head to the link in the episode notes to find out more about our 4 different tiers and their accompanying perks. Hello and welcome to another Witch Please Patreon bonus special guest interview. We haven't named any of this bonus material, so we just make up new names every time. I'm Hannah.
I'm Marcel.
And we have a very exciting guest joining us today, all the way from England. Yeah, I know the names of countries. Who, in classic Witch Please Patreon bonus style, just slid into our DMs with a really interesting theory, and we were like, great idea, get on the podcast immediately. Welcome, Ella.
Thank you so much. This is literally a dream come true. I've been listening to this podcast for so long.
Oh my.
I'm Ella McLeod. I'm a assistant podcast producer and writer from London, England.
Awesome. Yeah. Amazing. What kinds of podcasts do you make?
So I work for a production company called Something Else, shout out. And we make kind of all sorts, a lot of entertainment stuff, some factual things. Our like big hitter is David Tennant does a podcast with. So yeah, we did that.
Wait. Do you mean you work with like real celebrity humans?
I do actually work with some real celebrity humans. Yeah.
Oh my god! What are you doing with us?
I'm like the biggest Witch Please stan ever. The reason I do my job now is because when I was struggling as an actor. After every bad audition, I would listen to Witch Please and like feel better about my life.
Oh my god!
And then after like 2 years of struggling as an actor, I was like, maybe I just want to do this, and so I do.
Yeah. Oh my god, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Did you tell David Tennant about us?
I've not told David Tennant about you. But I have told I've told David Dimbleby about you. Do you guys know who David Dimbleby is?
No.
David Dimbleby is, you know, yeah, Hannah's laughing.
Hannah knows. I don't
he's
know
like a, he's a very like serious political journalist, and I recommended, he was talking about like good fun, like lefty podcasts, and I recommended Witch Please.
Oh my God.
Who else have I told about you guys that's like quite funny? I told Claudia Winkleman about you, but I don't know if that will register to any of your Canadian listeners, but she does our equivalent of Dancing with the Stars. That's quite funny. But yeah, I'm forever recommending you guys because everyone is a Harry Potter fan. And I'm like, but thinking critically. So I'm always like, which phase? Yeah.
This is truly the greatest introduction to a guest.
I'm so glad
I've ever experienced. This is amazing.
Oh, I'm delighted.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, we did not invite you on to talk to us about how great.
I mean, like, I could.
As much as we obviously thoroughly enjoy that, we invited you on to have a conversation about cats. And squibs, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and the arbitrary policing of magical boundaries.
Absolutely.
So let's start here with this observation that you made that the two major squib characters we see in the Harry Potter series both have really strong relationships, yeah, with cats.
Yeah, they do. And I find that fascinating. And the reason I find it fascinating. And I the reason I sent the message in the first place was because I'd gone on like a Google like wormhole about cats and magic and their history and their relationship with magic. So to have a look at squibs and cats, I think you first have to have a look at artificial scarcity. So I'm going to start with artificial scarcity, right? So artificial scarcity, just so everyone is, who's listening is on the same page, is this idea that there are resources that could be infinite or could be seen as renewable that are made difficult to access for the purpose of driving up competition. Drugs, mm-hmm, are, like medical drugs are a really good example of this. Wi-Fi is a really good example of this. Diamonds are a really good example of this. Diamonds are not rare. They're not rare. They're actually like quite easy to find, but they are. They actually are. Like, just take a walk one day, go for a dig, find a diamond. But because of an incredible marketing campaign, we're all convinced that they're this really rare jewel. So, in the wizarding world, magic...
Oh, sorry. Can I just add an example of artificial scarcity?
Yes, please.
The maple syrup reserve.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, so Quebec produces most of the maple syrup in the world.
Really?
And in hyper-productive years, they reserve it so that they don't overflood the market with maple syrup and drive down the value.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
So there are huge tanks of maple syrup. There's a maple syrup reserve.
Yeah.
And there was a heist.
Wow.
Anyway.
Okay, that's amazing. I need to...
Artificial scarcity.
I so have to look that up. I mean, houses are a really good example of artificial scarcity. I was trying to explain this to my sister. I was like... If especially in the UK, the government, if it was in governmental interest to solve homelessness, they could do so. They just won't, because having a flourishing, and I'm using big scare quotes here, flourishing housing market benefits their economy, basically. So in the wizarding world, we have this thing called magic. And how we define magic seems to me to be very much determined by the Ministry of Magic and those members of like the elite structures that prop up the hierarchical system of the Wizarding Society. What I mean by that is magic gets created as a kind of weird binary by people who police who can and can't use magic.
And we have so many examples of this.
We
right?
really
like
we do.
See Neville saying he wasn't sure if he would get into Hogwarts.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like if Neville didn't get into Hogwarts, then presumably Neville would not be a wizard, according to the like categorization of the ministry.
Presumably Neville would be considered a squib just a not magic person. But that doesn't make any sense, because Neville's mere existence and people like Neville, for example, Hagrid's mere existence, indicates that magic exists on a spectrum from like the kind of like hyper powerful. And we're kind of led to believe that like your magical ability is natural, again, scare quotes, because of things like Hagrid saying to Harry, your parents were really powerful wizards, so you will be a powerful wizard. Because of things like Dumbledore being really powerful, but Aberforth just not getting that gene, you know? So that, so magic. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have muggles. And then before muggles, we have squibs, who kind of exist in this like magic non-space almost. Why I find that idea really compelling is that it seems that the way that this is policed is by the ministry dictating who can and can't carry a wand.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month.
We know that wandless magic is possible because of all the, like, you know, 9-year-olds running around exploding snails and shit like that in the fourth
and
book.
And accidentally,
you know,
releasing snakes. Like,
accidentally releasing
they're
snakes.
They're doing it like, all the time.
Harry blows up Aunt Marge. He's not carrying his wand, but he just, like, does it because he's mad. So we know wandless magic exists, but we're led to believe that the only way that magic can be harnessed, controlled, is by a person owning a wand.
Well, and we find out later that goblins want access to wands.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not so much that goblins couldn't operate wands, it's just that wizards jealously guard the wand lore and jealously guard how you make them and how to operate them. So
right.
And what's really interesting there is that wands have to be purchased. So you are directly affected by your financial status or your access to gold. And then that affects your access to the magical community. What's really interesting about that, especially in the example of like Neville, is that Neville goes his whole life thinking that he might not get into Hogwarts, then gets to Hogwarts and is basically told that he's like a shitty wizard. Even though we know that from books 1 to 6, he has his dad's wand. Like, it's not even his, it's not a wand that he, that chose him, that he had an affinity with.
What? I forgot about this.
But this is the thing, and this is why, like, Ron, in books 1 and 2, is, like, kind of a substandard wizard, because he has Percy's old wand. So, yeah, so your whole access to this thing that is supposed to be, like, your birthright is controlled and bartered with by forces completely out of your, like, own control as an individual.
I mean, even Dumbledore, who is positioned as the greatest wizard of his age, is, we find out way later on, just has the most powerful wand.
Yeah, exactly.
And Hagrid's wand is snapped at the end of his third year.
Yeah.
And Hagrid doesn't have the financial means to just go and get himself a new one, whether he was allowed to or not, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I think for me as well, when we talk about, because I listened to your episode on class, which I loved because as a British person, like deeply entrenched class structures are things that you kind of get raised being beaten over the head with a little bit. And I always found like class and Harry Potter really fascinating because the things that kind of materially indicate your class in the Muggle world don't really seem to exist in the same way in the Wizarding world. Like, and I always kind of wondered like, okay, so the Weasleys don't have much money, so they have shabby robes, but isn't there like a spiffing up your robes spell? Like, like, I don't know. I was always like, well, like, okay, they live in this ramshackle house, but like, could they not just like magic up an extension? Like, I'm just confused about how that works. However,
this was our last bonus interview was with Dr. Ellie Armstrong, and we just started to tease out this idea of magical capital as like a version of cultural capital. Sorry, you were saying, however.
No, in my way of like understanding like magical capital, I think the thing that really enforces a kind of class structure is your access to magic and how much of it you're able to access, which is directly based on like how much gold you have, because like you can't, it's quite apparent that you can't just like magic up more gold, and gold is what you buy a wand with. But that little thing there seems quite separate to all of the other things going on with class in the story, because like the kind of pure blood status of wizards as a way of kind of denoting class is like very like inherently directly related to this like old English notion of like blue bloodedness and like ancestral wealth and things like that. But I think you could see a situation where someone who doesn't necessarily come from money but has magic is able to live quite comfortably. But if you don't have gold, you can't have a wand. So, and that's what I find really interesting.
Because otherwise there's no reason to have money in a magical world.
Literally none. Literally no reason at all.
Hold on now, you two pinkos. Like, let's just take it easy here. If you don't have money, how do you circulate goods and control the population through artificial means of segregation and hierarchy?
Like, exactly.
With wand access.
With wand access. Like, literally with access to who can and can't wield this magical tool. So, yeah, I mean, I find that, like, wild.
Yeah.
So, now we have, like, two individuals, Miss Argus Filch and Arabella Figg, who have been told that they're not magic enough to go to Hogwarts and therefore are not magic enough to possess a wand, because you're not allowed to possess a wand unless you've gone to Hogwarts or a Hogwarts equivalent. If you do, like, that's illegal. Which in itself, when you're just like, so you have magic, but you can't legally use it unless you possess a wand. And the penalty for that is incarceration.
Ace. These books are bonkers.
These books are bonkers. Bonkers. And a thing that I found really interesting in the last like year, because I'm, as I mentioned, I'm a writer and I've, well, am writing, but have mostly written a book, which is coming out next year.
And what? Plug your book.
Oh, okay. We'll do it again. Yeah, so my book is called Rapunzella, and it's a young adult fantasy.
Oh, my God.
And I'm really excited about it. And it's been published by Scholastic. And, yeah, it's, like, really cool. But a thing that's been really interesting to me, like, writing fantasy, is how do I create scarcity so that we have, like, tension in the story, so that like we don't get this like deus ex machina thing of everything just being sold by magic, but also without it being scarcity that basically just relies on capitalism. And my way of doing that has just been by having like good magic and bad magic, right? which the power books do, like,
yeah.
So it's just really bizarre to me that on top of the, like, good magic, bad magic, like, you know, in the sixth book, when our prime minister says to the minister for magic, you know, why is this happening? Like, can't you stop it? You guys have magic. And Cornelius Fudge replies, well, the problem is, minister, the other side have magic too. And I think that's enough. That's enough, right? Like, that's enough tension without, like, relegating people to poverty because they weren't, like, far enough along your spectrum to qualify for wand ownership. Like,
it is indeed.
Now we're at this place where we have these two characters who've basically been, like, ostracized from society because they don't... In my head, magic is like a sliding scale of, like black to white, and they're just, like, they don't sit in the grey enough, basically. Like, you know. So we have these two individuals who are considered to be not magic enough, and yet they have these immensely powerful magical relationships with cats. So, like, you can't tell me that Mrs. Fig, who, like, talks to her cats, can communicate with her cats, can send them to run errands for her, is not a bit magic. Like, that's just, what? Like, no, like, obviously not. Like, you can't tell me that Filch, who exists in this immensely magical space, which, like, assumingly, he has to be a bit magic to even be able to see, because that's, we're told that muggles and people without magic can't see Hogwarts, can't see it on a map, can't access it, can't get inside. So he's obviously, like, a little bit magic.
And has, like, a psychic connection with his cat. Like,
they are literally, like, obsessed with each other. Like, if Mrs. Norris sees some wrongdoing, Filch appears.
Yeah.
And you're telling me that he has no magic in him whatsoever? No, come on, get out of town. Get out of town. And the reason I find this so, like, interesting as a, like, cat mum and cat lover.
I love those paws. And
I'm gesturing to where my cat is, like, really elegantly.
Oh my goodness, there's, like, a tail and a paw just, like, sticking out of the hammock, just sort of waving.
Just lounging. Right? But the reason I find that really interesting is because of the kind of, like, history of domestication of cats. The adage is that we didn't domesticate cats, cats domesticated us. And I really believe that.
Animal behaviorists have a really hard time studying cats because it's hard to study an animal that has no inherent desire to please you, because it's not, you can't test its intelligence based on the premise that it will do something if it understands it. Like you would with dogs.
Absolutely.
But the recent studies into cat behavior show that they learned how to vocalize in the same register as human babies, because they figured out that we like that, and that if they make themselves sound like babies, we'll give them stuff.
100%. And when my cat will meow at me, I'll be like, she sounds sad. She's not sad. She just wants food or attention. But she's figured out exactly what tonal quality to use to tug on my heartstrings. And yeah, I mean, that example, I think, perfectly sets up the dichotomy between dogs and cats. And I'm not one of these people that's out here like, I'm a dog person, I'm a cat person, because I think it's valid to love and respect both for different reasons. But the domestication of dogs has had so much more human involvement in it over a period of tens of thousands of years, as humans have bred a variety of breeds of dogs to either fulfill certain domestic or labor roles, to basically be like free labor, free hunting helpers, free ratters, that kind of thing. Whereas cats have been so much harder to domesticate because the only reason they started hanging around humans in the first place, and this is kind of dated back to about 9,000 years ago, some places say Egypt, some say China, some say Cyprus, but it was basically they were attracted to settlements of humans because there were rats and cats were like, cool, free food. But it wasn't like they were attracted to human companionship specifically in the same way that dogs apparently were. They just went where the food went. And as a result of that, cats have maintained so many of their natural hunting instincts because they continue to go out and mate with wild cats. And I know this firsthand because I have a Bengal, and it is like living with a small leopard. So it's very apparent to me that those hunting instincts are still there when she's like pouncing on my feet at 3 a.m. But what's what I find so interesting about that is that now we have a sort of a contrast in Harry Potter of like dogs and cats, where all the dogs we see are very much defined by their loyalty to their people. And we don't mm-hmm. see that many dogs. We see Sirius, who is obviously an Animagus or Animagus. And we see Ripper, Aunt Marge's dog, mm-hmm. who basically seems to be like mm-hmm. the violent arm of Aunt Marge's hatred of Harry. Just like,
oh, no.
You know what I mean? Like, if Aunt Marge is the state, Ripper's the cop, you get, you know, like he's just out there, like chasing him up trees. Whereas,
and Fang.
And Fang. Oh, and Fang, who is basically an extension of Hagrid's desires, yeah. right? Is like so loyal to Hagrid, just wants to be around Hagrid all the time. And then we have these cats, and it's not that they're disloyal. Obviously, Mrs. Norris is very loyal to Filch, but she so clearly has her own autonomy, and she's so clearly like an independent thinker. And I think we see that in even the naming conventions of the pets, mm-hmm. of the cats in this series, because like Mrs. Norris and then like all of Mrs. Fig's cats are called like Mr. Prentice, Mr. Tibbles. There's kind of like a respect in those relationships.
Yeah.
Of like you're a grown up and I will call you Mr. Prentice and Mrs. Norris.
I wouldn't presume to use your first name. How familiar.
Absolutely, because that would be rude.
And I mean, even Crookshanks go like all of book three is about Crookshanks like embarking on this adventure yeah. without Hermione having any knowledge whatsoever.
Any knowledge at all. Crookshanks obviously towards the end of book three, Crookshanks like actively defends Sirius from the trio because Crookshanks has an understanding that Sirius is the good guy, even when the trio don't.
Crookshanks has solved the mystery before the rest of
like us. Way before Crookshanks solved the mystery in like chapter five. Like just Crookshanks knew. So and I personally think that when you look at this history of domestication, when you look at the way that dogs were specifically bred to please or satisfy or fulfill a human need, whether that was a German Shepherd being used as a guard dog or a French bulldog being bred to be like brachycephalic with health issues because we think it's cute. Just saying. Or sausage dog.
Medium, so people miss the fact that Ella just shrugged for 15 solid seconds.
Like, I don't know what to say, guys. Your sausage dogs will have like spine issues and hip dysplasia, but it's cool because it looks like a little sausage. Like, I'm just, yeah. So, like, we bred those things for a purpose and they fulfill a purpose. The only thing we've ever really been able to do with cats is breed them to have specific colors. But in terms of their, like, hunting patterns and their sleeping patterns and their feeding patterns, you can try. You can try.
Cat's gonna cat.
Cat is gonna cat. And I have tried. I really have tried to train my cat. But it doesn't work. She does what she wants to do.
This autonomy, right? It's like, you know how the book keeps saying the wand chooses the wizard?
Mm-hmm.
Cats choose wizards.
Absolutely.
Like, absolutely. Saying that the wand chooses the wizard when you have to buy it is really different from being like,
and
cats
honestly
choose you.
A thing I've often thought is like, are there just wands sitting in Ollivanders belonging to like poor kids who could never afford them that never choose anybody?
Yeah, you just broke my heart.
Just a wizardless wand who was like, oh, it's a shame that,
yeah,
you know, little Jimmy comes from a poor family. Like, wild.
Absolutely wild.
Completely wild. And I think, and I have often thought, that cats just have like a spectacular ability to reject all kind of human social structures,
mm-hmm.
which is why I deem them the most anti-capitalist animal.
yeah.
Because, like, even right now, like, our cats are sleeping. It's the middle of the goddamn day.
But don't they know there's work to be done?
Don't they know there's work to be done? Like, she doesn't care that we're on British summertime hours right now because she will sleep when she wants to sleep. She's napping for the revolution. Yeah. Just living here, like, rent-free because she's a cat, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there is this history of cats being seen as threatening or unnatural or frightening.
But also as sacred and powerful, right?
Yeah, but to societies that saw subversion as sacred and powerful as opposed to terrifying. Mm-hmm. You know, ancient Egyptians worshipped cats because of their independence and because of their ability to just come in, eat the rats and leave. They were like, wow, you must be sent from the gods because you're curious of our vermin, but we don't need to do anything for you. Like, we don't need to keep you alive. You just do the... It's the same thing with the scarab beetle. They just came in, cleared the shit and left. That's... You would think that's godly, wouldn't you? Whereas Pope Gregory IV... in 1233, issued a decree saying that all cats carried a part of Satan. I know, and I can see why, to a medieval Christian, a cat who slinks around at night and doesn't do as it's told would be quite frightening. You know?
Yep.
Like, you're doing all the things that scare me right now.
They are pure chaos.
Yeah, pure chaos.
All right, Ella, we are running out of time. I've enjoyed every aspect of this reading.
Me too.
So much. Will you plug your book one more time and maybe tell us a little bit about what it's about?
I would love to. So it's called Rapunzella. And as I said, it's a young adult fantasy. And it is, I'm going to get cancelled by so many people's parents. So it starts with a strike where two magical gardeners realize that the king they're working for isn't paying them fairly. And they realize that they actually own the means of production.
Oh my
and
God.
And so cause chaos and dissent in the kingdom. And the kind of subversion and like twisted fairy tale that's like me kind of explaining all the reasons why, like all of the Grimm brothers fairy tales and specifically Rapunzel pissed me off for so many years, is about the king trying to seek his vengeance on this like coven of witches. And then alongside that is a modern kind of contemporary romance about a teenage girl coming of age in a city that she's slowly struggling to recognize as it gets changed by gentrification and how her connection to this like magical realm slowly radicalizes her.
Oh my God. When does this incredible book come out and who publishes it again?
So it's been published by Scholastic and it comes out in the April of next year.
Oh my goodness. I can't wait. Oh.
If we don't have you back on before then, we are definitely going to have you back on when that book comes out.
Oh, I would love to come on and chat more. Anytime.
What a delight. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
If people want to follow you on Twitter, where can they find you?
Oh, yes. So on Twitter and on Instagram, I'm at McLeodMouth. McLeod is McLeod mouth.
Amazing. Thank you. You've been listening to a special bonus episode of Witch Please. Bonus episodes are released once a month to our $5, $10, and $13 Patreon tiers. They always feature a special guest who contributes some unique insights into the series, the world of critical theory, fandom, or other topics we just can't get into our regular season. And they are always fun. If you'd like to hear our full backlog of Patreon bonus content, you can become a patron today! Yeah! And if you join at the $10 or $13 tier, you'll be just in time to join us to watch Hocus Pocus on October 30th. Just in time for the Halloween season.
This is the end.
No.
I feel it.
Okay.
We are doomed.
Finally, as you know from our extensive end credits, Witch Please is a small but mighty team supported by you, our listeners. We have over 600 dedicated patrons who pledge monthly to make sure our producer gets paid and our show gets made. If you want to make the leap and become a patron of Witch Please, you can join today for anywhere between $2 and $13 a month. And in doing so, you will be making Coach very happy. Of course, if becoming a paid subscriber is just not in the budget right now, we understand. It's just as helpful to tell your friends and family about the show, to leave us a review, and to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OWitchPlease. And with that, later, witches.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.